I was conscious that I wanted to soak it all up, but I just couldn't because it was kind of, it was much bigger than me. The moment was much bigger than me. And it's probably the first time in a bike race that I've ever felt that the winning the race, the victory was more than who I am. It was a victory for women's cycling.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Better With Bikes podcast. I'm your host, Richie Burke, joined by my co-host, Eric Bjorling, and we have the queen in the house today for this episode, Lizzie Dynan. She is a world champion, an Olympic medalist, a four-time British national road race champion, 2021 Paris-Roubaix champion, first woman to win a triple crown of all the women's monument classics, and she's a relatively new mom with baby number two on the way. We covered a lot of ground in
this
episode.
Huge episode. Absolutely. I mean, what a world champion human being. We're going to learn a lot about Lizzie today. We cover everything from what she has in common with Hermione Granger to her favorite American football team and why. It's a big episode.
What shows she's watching. Also, dove deep into Paris-Roubaix, which was a huge win for her, a huge moment for women's cycling.
Huge moment.
In
huge
general. Moment. And she's just been breaking down barriers since really becoming a mom, making a very successful comeback, which is somewhat unprecedented, and now she's about to do it again. So we had a great chat with Lizzie. So the last time many of us saw you, you were on the podium at Paris-Roubaix. Now you've got your second baby on the way. How have things been going for you? How's life right now?
The last kind of 3 months have been pretty tricky because I've been quite ill. This pregnancy is much harder than the first pregnancy, but I'm hoping that means a much easier baby. So, you know, I'm being optimistic. Life's really good. Yeah, it's actually great that the thing that makes me feel the best at the moment is still riding my bike. So I have a couple of good hours in the morning where I feel really good. So, yeah, we're all happy.
Lizzie, before we dive into your journey and your big win at Paris-Roubaix last year, can you touch on how you ended up on Team Trek-Segafredo in the first place?
So I found out I was pregnant, obviously, and I was with a different team at the time. And it became kind of quickly apparent that there wasn't going to be a future with that team. So I decided to walk away and kind of take a gamble and think, okay, well, I don't know what my comeback's going to look like, but I'm going to do it this way, like by myself. And then Trek approached me, and it was just this dream scenario where they came along and decided that they wanted to start a women's team and they wanted to sign me. And they actually signed me at 6 months pregnant. So Trek came on board with me before I'd even done a race with them and covered my maternity leave, which was just such a show of respect for the career I'd had and also like what I could do in the future. And it just started a really a partnership that I feel incredibly proud of, and just lucky and grateful that I found a team that get who I am as an athlete but as a person and a mom.
Now, let's talk about 2021. 2021's edition.
Let's talk about Paris-Roubaix 2021. Last year was obviously the first time women could compete in this historic event. Did you have it circled on your calendar? What was your mindset like going in?
Yeah, well, I mean, last year, 2021, was off the back of 2020, which was obviously a pandemic year where we had things like the Olympics being postponed. We had the inaugural Paris-Roubaix postponed. There was a lot of uncertainty. And going into 2021, my main goal was the Olympics and the World Championships in Flanders. So Roubaix kind of came after that. And it was a big focus for the whole team. But actually, my form into Paris-Roubaix wasn't as good as I'd hoped. I didn't perform at the World Championships like I'd hoped. And we had Ellen van Dijk in the team who'd just become world champion, European road race champion. She's, you know, made for that kind of course. And she was our team leader. So, you know, I accepted that wholeheartedly and was completely focused on doing a good job for her. So I think from that perspective, I was just very relaxed in comparison to Ellen, maybe, who was there with all the pressure. So with retrospect, I was in a very unique and relaxed position.
For being in a relaxed position, you broke away very early in that race. Was that the plan going into it? Did you feel good doing that? Like you were going to be able to maintain that the whole time?
It was definitely not the plan. No, the plan was to protect our leaders, who were Ellen and Elisa Longo-Borghini. I was to be one of the last workers who would be in the final and hopefully be able to kind of right any wrongs that happened in the tactic, or just offer them even a wheel or whatever. You know, Roubaix is so hectic. So actually, the first 30 kilometers were very intense. They're on tarmac. They were very fast. And it came to about 3 kilometers before the first cobbled section. And I said to Audrey, who was our team captain, I said, "Where is Ellen and Elisa? Should I go back for them?" And she said, "No way, you stay in front. We need someone in front." And because of a simple call like that, I stayed in the front. And it was absolutely chaos and quite scary, actually. It was like a bunch sprint into these cobbles. And there was just a moment where it opened up on the left-hand side. And I did a full sprint onto the cobbles. And I looked back. And my teammate, Loretta, who happened to be in my wheel, had let the gap go. And I thought, oh, okay, well, the safest thing to do on cobbles is keep your momentum and keep going. And that's what I did. And kind of came off the first cobble section with about a 20-second gap, probably. And I think all the other kind of, you know, leaders in other teams, I even know that Yolene Dore told the SD Works girls to leave me. You know, she's crazy. It's way too early. Just let her go. So, you know, because of some of those calls, I was lucky and I kept on going and nobody was talking to me in the radio. I was like, you know, I'm off the front, right? And she was like, yeah. Just keep going at 90%. I was like, okay. And then it kind of, you know, the gap kept going up and up and up. And I saw a minute and a half on the chalkboard that the motorbike came up with. And I said, you know, so what's the plan? And she said, yeah, now you need to go 100%. I was like, right, okay. So, you know, these simple calls, but even until 15 kilometers to go, I really had in my mind that I was a domestique and I was still drawing out the peloton to make it harder for the other teams and give an easy ride to Ellen and Elisa.
That's a long time to be alone. Like, are you doing anything in your head, at least just to kind of keep yourself going? Are you singing songs to yourself? Is there anything, if nobody's talking to you and you're just out there suffering 100%, is there anything that, like, you just kind of shift yourself into a mindset that just keeps you at that pace?
I think with Roubaix, it's unique in that you have to be so focused because of the cobble sections and because of the conditions. You know, it was so slippy and wet that I was really just concentrating on staying upright. So, and I kept breaking it down, you know, that's another cobble sector done, that's another cobble sector done. And that's the way to get through it. It wasn't like a long mountain pass that just is rising above you and is daunting in that way. It was much more about just getting through each sector.
And just counting them down one by one?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
At what point did it hit you like, oh, I'm actually going to win this thing?
I mean, I heard that Mariana was chasing me down, and I thought, right, it was like being hunted. I mean, if you've got somebody like that behind you who suddenly closes the gap from 2 minutes to a minute and a half, it felt like she did it in 100 meters. I just thought, oh my goodness, because from the recons, the last two sections of cobbles are just exhausting and they're particularly difficult and technical. Mariana is an exceptionally talented and technical rider as well. So I knew that she'd be moving faster over them than me. So I just had to keep my cool, keep focused, stay upright. And because of that, I definitely didn't consider the fact that I'd won the race until I entered the velodrome. And probably even until I'd done a lap of the velodrome and still not seen Mariana, then I could start to trust it and think, okay, I've got this, which was... Yeah, pretty kind of surreal experience, really.
Sure. What was it emotionally like to enter the velodrome?
A huge kind of... It's hard to describe it. It's like on my wedding day, I couldn't take it all in.
Yeah,
I was so happy and so overwhelmed to be around all these people, and I just wanted to kind of take it all in, but all your senses are just overloaded. And it was the same in Roubaix. I was like, and I was conscious that I wanted to soak it all up, but I just couldn't, because it was kind of, it was much bigger than me. The moment was much bigger than me. And it's probably the first time in a bike race that I've ever felt that the winning the race, the victory, was more than who I am. It was a victory for women's cycling, and it was a unique experience to feel like I was representing more than myself, or more than just Trek Segafredo. So it was, yeah, it was incredibly kind of, I felt incredibly proud, but not just of myself, of all the women who'd made the steps to get us there. It felt like a team effort.
Very cool. I'm sure Phil will appreciate you comparing that to your wedding day. Which one was better for you?
Yeah, my wedding day, of course.
Of course. So, I have two victory questions, post victory questions. One, where's the stone going in the house? Do you guys have a spot for it, or is there like, we'll just figure it out, or we've got some books that we need to prop up?
Yeah, so transporting it actually straight from the women's tour. Straight from Paris-Roubaix, we drove to the women's tour. So we took the cobbled on the Eurotunnel over to the UK. And my parents were at the race, so they took it back to my parents' house in the UK. It's about 15 kilograms, so it's a heavy cobble. But yeah, mum and dad are babysitting the cobble until we grow up and get our own house. It's too big for our tiny apartment.
So obviously, for those of you guys who know out there who listen and you understand Roubaix and the mysticism around it, there are the Roubaix showers, which was where the athletes really kind of finished the race and these famous things. On the showers, every winner of Paris-Roubaix. Lizzie, your name's going to be added to that. Do they let you pick which one, or is it just like, we're going to assign you one?
So I walked into the showers and there was this Belgian fella there, and he was like, he took me round all the names, and then with a massive smile on his face said, "This is your spot." And it was
so cool.
It was really cool to think, gosh, this man has put up all these plaques, and he was incredibly proud. But he was also equally excited that he was going to put mine up. And that felt quite special. Yeah.
Well, if we're going to talk about, you know, carrying the weight of women's cycling and this really first thing, if you rewind the tape all the way back, that's probably something that like was never on the radar when you got started at the age of 15. And love to kind of go all the way back about your beginnings in racing and how that story played out.
I had a quite unusual start in cycling in my career. So I was talent spotted at school. Basically, in 2005, I think it was, the Olympic Association announced that the Olympics was coming to London in 2012. And at that point, British cycling kind of came up this initiative where they needed to go into schools and look for talent, particularly female talent, because they didn't have enough. And luckily for me, they came to my school. And also luckily for me, I decided that I wanted to do the test, because actually I wasn't really interested in cycling, but I was interested in missing double maths, I think it was. And I did this kind of really easy test on a mountain bike around the school field. And they spotted something in me. They decided that I had talent. And from there, I was put into this process where I was given a coach. I was given a bike, which was huge, because as a teenage girl, as a 15-year-old girl, there was no way I was going to spend money on a bike at that time. It just wasn't a priority. But I was offered this opportunity. And you know, to dream of being an Olympian was something that really inspired me. I wasn't from a cycling family, so it wasn't like, you know, I had any role models in cycling. It was more about the Olympics at that point. So I, at 18, decided, okay, I'm going to try and give this cycling a go rather than go to university like my friends. And yeah, luckily for me, I was quite successful on the track in particular. That's where I sort of first got my taste of success. And in 2011, the UCI threw a curveball and they changed the points race event to the Omnium in the Olympics. And I'm a good bunch racer, but I'm definitely not a good flying 200 meter sprinter. So that kind of pushed me into a corner, really. And I decided to focus on the road and try and pursue a road career. And it was the best decision I ever made because I absolutely love the road. Yeah, I managed to get a silver medal in the London Olympics, and that was the first British medal. So it was a huge deal. quite life-changing in a way. But I never looked back from that moment, really.
It's actually not that dissimilar. Like, Emma Watson was cast for the role of Hermione Granger in the Harry Potter series almost the exact same way.
Really?
They just don't go into American schools and pick kids out to do life-changing stuff.
Well, do you know, it really worked. I mean, four of the Olympic medalists from the UK were females, were from that talent program. So it worked. I mean, they don't do it anymore because they don't need to, because the sport has grown so much. But they really did back then, and it worked.
Well, we're doing the interviewing and not getting interviewed right now. So, Lizzie, you said you didn't have any aspirations in cycling, really, the Olympics more so. But what were you doing before you were 15? Were you doing other sports? What did you want to be when you were growing up and when you were young?
Yeah, I was the person who filled in for everything. I was the person who was the goalkeeper in the football team and lost every tournament on penalties because I had no skill. But I was always up for joining every team. So it was interesting that I was good at sports, like in every team, good enough to make every team in school, but I was never the best at anything. So for that reason, I was really lucky that cycling found me, because that was the sport that I excelled in. And I just would never have known if they'd not come to my school.
Lizzie, I don't know if it's like that, this in the UK, but in the US, there's a trend where a lot of parents will oppose to having their kids play a lot of different sports in through high school, and kids playing multiple sports in high school, they'll, you know, say you're only going to do basketball or you're only going to do golf, and really laser in on that sport from a young age. You're an example of someone who did lots of things and then found cycling at 15. Do you have any thoughts on that
as a
parent as well?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, if the child themselves is forcing it and pushing it, then it's great. And yeah, you do what you can to support it. But at the same time, I think it's really valuable to not make sport too serious at a young age. And it's actually valuable in terms of their physical development to be doing different things. So I really value variety, and particularly team sports. I think it's really important for social development as well, to be involved with other, you know, people in different sports and backgrounds.
When you come back after you have this next child, this will be the second time that you're returning to professional cycling. Do you have any advice for others who want to take a break to have a child and then come back?
I would say get yourself a husband as good as mine. your team is hugely valuable around you. That's massive. I mean, I certainly won't be able to do it without the support of my husband, without the support of Trek. But I would also say just jump in with both feet. I mean, I think it's just such an incredible experience, and it will make you, I really believe in the ethos of a happy athlete is a good athlete. And if you're denying yourself kind of things that you feel will make you happy, then that's not the way to go. It's not a sustainable way to go. It may be for some people, but certainly for me, I needed more than just the sole focus of cycling in my life. And it's been, yeah, really good balance for me.
And you've also been involved in the sport through such an incredible transitional period, I think, through women's cycling. It's become, I think, so much more widely viewed. It's the interest has never been as high from our perspective. What do you think that women's cycling needs to do next, or what's the next step for women's cycling?
I really think we're getting there. I think all the kind of important parts are in place, in terms of investment, sponsorship, but also exposure. Obviously, media is so important to us, and that has really been stepped up with the introduction of the Women's World Tour. There are still times when it's not good enough, but I think now that there's this, I feel like a societal shift towards equality, that things are just not kind of let go anymore, you know. Excuses aren't really good enough anymore. And I think that's brilliant. And we're at a point where we're not going to regress anymore. So it's just about continuously pushing, I think. Things like the Tour de France Femmes are going to be huge. They're going to be a massive platform. And I hope that we can build on that.
Let's touch on that for a second, too. What excites you about that new event? Because I think that's something that's circled on all of our calendars as well.
It excites me because it's the Tour de France. It's what everybody asks you about. It's, you know, I came from a non-cycling family, but I knew about the Tour de France. It's just got this iconic tradition. Everybody's heard of it, and it transcends the sport. You know, it's a worldwide event, and yeah, we need to share a bit of that stage. Really,
you've accomplished so much. What keeps you coming back? Do you have future goals when you come back, opposed to just hanging it up?
I think the fact that I just don't feel like I'm done. I still feel that I have a lot of motivation. I don't feel ready to retire. I suppose also seeing my husband retire from professional sport was an advantage in the fact that sometimes you can get bogged down thinking the grass is greener as an athlete. You're like, oh, I can't wait to retire and, you know, not be tired anymore or not have to go to the airport or whatever. But actually, I love my job, and seeing the fact that it is hard to retire, it's hard to walk away from what is essentially a dream job, has kind of bolstered my opinion that I should do this as long as I possibly can.
All right, Lizzie, now we're going to move on to the lightning round. First question, where's your favorite place to ride?
Yorkshire.
Favorite snack?
Cheese.
any specific kind of cheese?
Just the stronger, the better, really.
See, she is a Packers fan.
Yeah, she's a Packers fan. That. She's really playing into Wisconsin. Pre-race routine. Anything you need to do before a big race?
I need to listen to a good playlist. I need the energy to be high in the bus. I like good music.
What's on the playlist?
Yeah. Trash.
That's okay. That's okay. We need the Spotify playlist.
That's probably on my playlist too. We might have similar taste in music.
Yeah, I mean, the
if you'd like to name an artist.
Britney Spears, Guns N' Roses, it's all in there.
That's a wide spectrum right there. I like it. Post-race routine, what do you do after a tough ride?
So after races, I always have a French baguette with butter and cheese. That's my post-race meal and a recovery shake.
Are you binging a show right now? Favorite show on Netflix or Hulu?
Yep, The Morning Show.
Oh, is that right? That's Apple Plus,
that
right?
That is Apple Plus, yep.
Oh, that's right.
Me and Eric are a little behind on our pop culture
well,
right now.
Well, it's good. You should shoot in.
That is an acceptable answer. Favorite activity outside of cycling?
Going to the beach.
Where do you live right now?
I live in Monaco, so I'm pretty lucky. I'm close to the beach.
Sounds slightly nicer than Wisconsin where we are right now. Looking back, what is your favorite win?
Paris-Roubaix.
And also looking back, is that what you're most proud of?
No. I'm most proud of the women's tour in 2019.
How so?
It was the first race that I won after Orla was born. She was 9 months old. So it was beyond my expectations, let's say.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of the Better with Bikes podcast. Just a reminder to subscribe and write a review if you have not already. That helps us get more ears on the show, and we'd love to hear your feedback. Also, a big thank you to Lizzie for coming on and taking us inside her win at last year's Paris-Roubaix, letting us know what it's like being a professional athlete and a mother, and it was great getting to know her better on a personal level. The Better with Bikes podcast is powered by Trek Bicycle, and until next time, ride bikes, have fun, feel good.